Welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of this podcast. And today on the line with me, I have Byron Belitos. And the book that we're going to be speaking about today is called The Center Within, Lessons from the Heart of the Urantia Revolution. And Byron, you're joining us from Fairfax. Is that correct today?
Fairfax, California. That's correct.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, most of our listeners out there are going to, this is going to be intriguing material, number one. And two, they don't know that much about you, so I'm going to give them a little bit of information. Mm-hmm. Byron is a writer, journalist, editor, and the owner of Origin Press, an award-winning book publishing company, and the co-author and publisher of two previous books about the Urantia book. Byron has been a student of the Urantia for 35 years and has written, spoken, and given workshops worldwide on its teachings. He's got a BA honors in the intellectual history of the University of Chicago in 1977, studied poetry with Allen Ginsberg at Naropa University. His graduate studies have embraced history, literature, religious studies, and theology at the University of California and CIIS, which is also located in San Francisco. Byron is also an inaugural member of Ken Wilber's Integral Institute, and he resides in Fairfax. Byron, you know, when I first picked up this book, as I think for many people who are on a spiritual journey, it obviously is it's quite unique. Can you give us a little bit of the history, because I think that will help our listeners, regarding how this got written? I know this was written, your particular book was written to help people understand the Urantia better. And I'd like for you to give a little bit of history behind this, if you could.
Happy to do it, Greg. And just a little correction on pronunciation. It's Urantia.
Urantia book. I even wrote that down, Byron, and I messed it up. So, okay.
Yeah, it's a strange word, Urantia book, okay. Or Urantia revelation.
Okay.
And it's known as a revelation because we can't, no one has ever come forward to say, I wrote this book, and there was actually a court case where they were unable to present an author, and therefore the court said that there's no copyright in this text. Hmm. So a little bit interesting background there, because there's never been an author. So it purports to be dictated by angels. And the text is 2,000 pages long, and the book that I sent you, Greg, of course, is just a little backgrounder book about some of the spiritual lessons of the text. And mm-hmm. I came across this really kind of by accident in 1974, way, way back, and I was, a young man searching for something new, something with truth in it, and suddenly I had this 2,000-page tome in my lap, really by happenstance, and I've never plumbed the depths of it. It's been 35 years now.
Wow.
I'm still studying it.
So you have a copy of the actual book itself, and what you're saying is the Urantia book is 2,000 plus pages, correct?
2,096 pages. Mm-hmm. It has 190 chapters.
Wow.
So imagine that. And the most important thing to know about the Urantia book is that the last part of the Urantia book, it's part four of the Urantia book, has the life and teachings of Jesus according to the angelic record. That's what it's claiming to be, mm-hmm. the last part of it. So that's what people, if you do nothing else, know that there's a book out there that claims to have the angelic record of the life of Jesus. So if you're into Jesus, you might want to read this part.
Well, this came in the 20s and 30s through a group in Chicago, and there is a Urantia Foundation there, correct?
And, right. They're the original. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's been purported to actually have come through this special group of people who are avatars, to say the best, correct?
No, there's nothing. No claims of being special at all. No,
okay.
They're just ordinary people, and there's really nothing around the Urantia phenomenon that has to do with special people, special avatars, gurus, it's quite almost the opposite of that, kind of working class people. But the leader of the group was a psychiatrist, pretty well known psychiatrist at the University of Chicago. But there were the people that were around this thing were people that were reading the papers. They call them the chapters, actually, are called the papers.
Mm-hmm.
They would come through kind of miraculously. I can describe how they came through. And they would read them, and they would feed questions back to the celestial beings.
Right, right. I remember reading the encounter with Will from your partner Fred, who co-authored this with you, right?
Well, now that's the other. That's not the Urantia book.
Okay.
That's the later on. It's complicated.
Okay.
It takes a while to get the whole story. So the Urantia book comes out in 1955, and there were a couple hundred study groups around the United States by the 70s or 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You never hear about it, though.
Right. You don't. Yet there's 400,000 copies out in press, right?
Yeah, by now probably 650,000.
Wow, that's a lot of copies of this. Okay.
And in Spanish, about 500,000 copies sold.
Just in Spanish, 500,000 copies.
It's huge in Latin America. It's a big fad right now. Maybe 100,000 copies in French, and it's in 7 other languages.
Amazing.
Yeah, you never hear about it. There's never any coverage.
No, not at all. So we're giving it a little coverage today. So you,
yeah, right.
So instead of giving the time to kind of the history here, I was very interested. So go on.
On the history, well, so this group at first was something like if your listeners know how Edgar Casey brought through things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He would be in a sleeping state, completely unconscious and sleeping state, and there would be voices coming through him. And that's how this originally started. There was a guy, kind of like an Edgar Casey, and some people think it is Edgar Casey, but it's not, who had these beings speaking through him. And they brought this, they being the guy's wife and a friend, brought this psychiatrist in to try to figure this out. And that was in 1911. And he couldn't figure it out because the stuff coming through was really, really advanced. So they were kind of instructed by these angels, right, speaking to this guy until 1924. And the angels kept saying, we're going to give you a book, we're going to give you a book, get ready, get ready. So they kind of trained them in higher teachings. And then suddenly, these chapters would appear miraculously, as hard as that is to believe. And they would appear in various ways. They would appear on the desk the next morning. They didn't know how it got there. Mainly that's how it would occur.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on for 15 years.
I was going to say quite a long period of time for 2,000 plus pages.
Yeah, and it wasn't just sort of one draft. They would do a draft, and then they'd say, have your colleagues read this.
Mm-hmm.
Give us questions. So what happened is the original group, including a psychiatrist, could go back into this guy who would be in a sleeping state and ask and say, look, we read this chapter way over our heads. Dumb it down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the celestials would give him a new draft.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly it was more technical. They'd say, we don't understand this section. We don't understand this phrase. You know, what does this mean? So they went back and forth for years and years and years. And by the end of it, they had about 300 people reading it. Reading the drafts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's how it came. And that's what purportedly the angelic group wanted. They wanted to interact. They didn't want to just kind of drop it on people's heads. They wanted to interact and see where they were at.
Well, interestingly, your partner in this and your co-author, Fred Harris, he gave out hundreds of copies of this, but no one really wanted to read it. And so as a result, you guys teamed up and decided to create something that would make this a little more understandable. Is that right?
That's right. But we were also, we didn't know what to do. And I was like Fred. I would hand out copies. It was, you know, a little bit too advanced and too much to read. And so what happened is another kind of miraculous event. In the late 80s, early 90s, the same angels returned to this time not in Chicago, but in about 50 locations. They would contact people, and this is like real old-fashioned channeling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They would contact people who were already in Urantia study groups. We have these groups that meet and study the text.
Right.
And there'd be a contact, and you'd be sitting in one of these groups, and one of the people would say, you know, I have this voice, and it's an angel. I can feel the presence of this being, and they want to say something to us. And thus began probably the most important channeling event in world history, because all at the same time, really beginning in 1991, groups in all over the world were receiving teachings about the original text.
Okay, so they were getting more clarification.
Yeah, we really needed it, because it's not an easy book, but also, you know, the book is like a reference text.
Right.
And it's like a physician's desk reference for metaphysics or something.
Right.
And what you need to have is now a class where the, you know, where the professor teaches from the textbook. So that's what they did. These celestial beings then initiated these classes, and they would teach us through a channel. And the lessons that Fred's group, you know, Fred was in Tallahassee of all places, and his group had a really, really funny teacher. And they would channel this stuff, but it was serious stuff too. And they went for 3 years with this fabulous set of teachings. And Fred and I thought this was the best that we could find. But there were like 50 other places where stuff was coming through that was the similar content. And these were particular celestial beings, angelic beings. But the one that Fred's group was witty, so we thought we'd make a book out of it. So this is the book that explains the spiritual teachings of the Urantia text in a group setting.
Well, the book goes into, you know, in all these various sections, but it's very well done, and to just acknowledge you on that. But let's just give the listeners a little bit of information about this, because somebody's on a spiritual quest. There's obviously so many different paths people can take today, and this is one path to assist them in going deeper. And yeah, what this does, and you and Fred have done a very good job of articulating this, you know, just here in your first chapter, it's Jesus listened with his heart, and you go into a story, and then at the end of each one of these, you take the Urantia text from where it came from, pages 1460 through 61. And
right,
all of this is done exactly that way. So what's the intention behind that? Is it to provide the layman's approach and then to provide the actual text for people to better understand these fundamentals of Jesus? Because much of it is, and I will say, it's around Jesus. And I'm going to wonder, you know, okay, so how many people will be open to that?
Yeah, they'd have to be into Jesus. I mean, if you're,
right,
if you're into Krishna, it's really not your bag.
Right, right.
But you have to not be fundamentalist, obviously.
Well, most definitely, because you're not going to be too accepted if you are. And
yeah,
I guess there is a little controversy. You were the head of something called 911. What was it exactly?
I wasn't the head of it. I was one of the people in the 9/11 Truth Movement.
9/11 Truth Movement. Okay. So what was the controversy there? Was that the fundamental Christians kind of pushing the buttons against what you guys were out there doing?
Oh, no, it has to do with September 11th, 2001.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. I just happened to see it up on the web. Okay.
Yeah, it's under my – yeah. I'm a journalist and a publisher of many things, and I published a book about what happened on 9/11
okay,
in New
so
York.
Okay, so nothing to do with this whatsoever. Okay.
No, nothing to do with it at all.
Okay.
So here
you are going through this book, and this book gives a, kind of a verse from you and Fred, or you, who wrote the top. And then you go back and you articulate from the Urantia book each page and segment that it came from. But, you know, as I'm reading where this came from, it doesn't seem that complicated to understand. So give us a little bit of the intent behind what you're kind of getting at with these, the way you guys have laid this book out and how people can understand this better.
It's pitched at people that are really, you know, just real basic, you know, handbook of teachings for the ordinary, you know, truck driver type thing. You know? Mm-hmm. But so that's why we broke it down. What we did is we took the best nugget sort of paragraphs from the Urantia book, mm-hmm. and we got about 250 of them. And then we took the best nugget, like little paragraphs from the Celestial Angel teacher, and we matched them up. And it was just a creative and fun thing to do that introduces you to the teachings of the Urantia book in a very soft way. And we it was actually based on the kind of patterned after A Course in Miracles. Are your listeners familiar with A Course in Miracles?
Oh, I'm sure they will be. Yeah, most people are familiar with A Course in Miracles. So you followed after that, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Like the text of A Course in Miracles is not easy to read. And it's like the Urantia book. It's kind of intense. So they have a workbook, right? It's got one page per day. And that's what we did here. We did not exactly one page per day, but we have one page per lesson.
Right.
So we kind of thought The Course in Miracles was really a great way. You know, the workbook was a wonderful thing. So we just have one lesson per day.
So you've taken this Urantia book, the 2,000-plus pages, distilled it down into your book, which is, gosh, it's only about 284, including the appendix and the glossary.
Right.
And you've taken the best of the best, right?
That's right.
And you've put it in here. So some of this stuff, I mean, is basic fundamental understanding of anybody on the path of spirituality. So chapter 5 is really about meaning and purpose of stillness and practice.
Yeah,
and,
so we get into that if you like, yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. Because, you know, in both the Eastern and Western philosophies, this whole part about connecting with God is, if you find any one thing fundamental in any spiritual teaching, what you're going to find is this part about not whether it's praying or whether it's meditation, to make that connection, to go within. Because let's face it, your book is called The Center Within. Can you comment about the importance in the Urantia book on how important this is to people making that connection to the God Center?
It's really the number one priority of the teachings of the Urantia book, and in my view, really the number one priority of the New Testament is that, you know, the kingdom of God is within. But it doesn't, the Bible doesn't depict Jesus going off to meditate per se, really. But the Urantia book does. It depicts him going off from away from the apostles and from the crowds to get with the Father, to get with God in a very quiet, still space. Not like doing transcendental meditation. That's not what he's doing. He is communing with God, but it is a little bit like the Eastern teaching in that they call it stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful word. It's to me a better word than meditation, because stillness implies that there's something really deep down inside that's trying to reach you. And so if you become very still, that thing very deep inside can talk to you. And that's really the core teaching here, is that within you, within your mind, within your heart, is not just sort of something vague called the kingdom of God. It's an actual fragment of God. Urantia book's chief teaching is that God, the God of heaven, God the Father, God the Mother, sends into each person a part of himself. And it's, again, it's not vague like the image of God is within you, as they say in the Bible. It's a real piece of divinity within you.
Mm-hmm.
And you, all the more reason then to be sit still so that piece of divinity can speak to you.
Right, and so what you're, you know, what's being advocated here by the Urantia book and then your book, which is distilling it down to make it simpler for our listeners and our readers, is really that this practice of going within is your way to make a connection. And one of the areas that you talk about here is discerning the divine will and always turning to the Father first. So that, again, this is also about, you know, looking to God and choosing God first as your resource, let's put it that way, your connection, correct?
Correct. And the Urantia book is pretty specific about this. It's not that you're like diving into a big ocean and you're merging with the ocean and that's God. It's different in that God actually is moment to moment tracking what's best, and that's God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And so your will gets aligned, not just your energy, but your will. In other words, I will do this. I will love myself. I will love people, others as I love myself. I will give, you know, all the things we think of as being the spiritual path is God's will. It's not just a vague set of principles. It's something that's alive and active and dynamic in the moment. And God is omnipresent in the moment and knows what's best.
Yeah, so you're inherently, it's grace tunes you to the Father's will. I'm looking at here, page 95. So it's really, you're really following, behold the Christ within them, behold the teachings, go forth to emanate them. So these teachings are really more about, you know, awakening each moment inside yourself, correct?
It's mainly about awakening each moment inside yourself, and we call that the center within. There's other parts of it that have to do with God as transcendent. In other words, God is not just inside each of us, but God is also creator. He's transcendent. He's not really a he. He's kind of a he and a she, or he's beyond gender.
So Father, Mother, God, huh?
Father, Mother, God, but God is transcendent, not just, you know, a lot of the New Age folks tend to think of God as being within, and that's the end of the story. But the Urantia theology, you know, is more sophisticated. It's, there is a creator God who has a location in the universe. And that's why the Urantia book is kind of difficult, because the first part of it explains that place.
Uh-huh.
And that's not covered in our book, and we don't have to cover it here, but it says there is a center of the universe that God dwells. Literally, a mother universe.
Yes, and is that center outside of self or within self?
It's outside of self. It's
okay.
Literally like going into astrophysics, and you see billions
okay.
of galaxies out there, and it tells you all those galaxies we're seeing out in space.
Mm-hmm.
Are actually rotating around a center.
Right, okay. I get it. All right.
And that center is the center of infinity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place, it's actually outside of space-time, where God is resident. So, yeah, so this kind of cuts through our narcissism.
Definitely. So, you know, one of the things you mentioned is faith is not belief. Faith is what we are about. And you say, let's take a little bit longer time to get in touch. Now, in today's world, you might people be making reference to your knowing versus your belief. I think we hear a lot of that in the metaphysical world. Can you explain that to the listeners a little bit more about this section where faith is not belief?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that, Greg, because that's a very important distinction in the Urantia teaching. They actually kind of redefine the word faith. You know, a lot of people think faith means, you know, that you believe in these dogmas that are in the, you know, Nicene Creed, and that's your faith. The Urantia book says, calls that belief. It's a belief in a proposition, you know, that Jesus will come back, make a second coming, and there'll be a resurrection of the dead. You know, those are dogmas that you believe. Faith in the Urantia book is something that liberates you from the bonds of narrow thinking and fixed ideas. Faith means you're fully in the moment, able to be spontaneously responsive to the needs of the moment, and you know, highly creative and flexible to do the will of God, because the will of God is going to vary. God is omniscient, sees it all. And if you're really narrow and you're just into being a church lady and, you know, making sure everyone pays their dues or something, you know, to the church, I mean, that's a narrow thing. But real faith is openness to reality.
Right. So you have a faith that goes beyond that. So in these teachings, you have Well, and like I said earlier, it's more of a belief, and I'm sorry, it's more of a knowing, right?
Yeah, I would say it's a knowing that you are, you don't have to be concerned with your salvation at all. You're always already safe, and you're already saved. You know that you're loved. You know that you're worthy of all these great things that are heaped upon, you know, us by God, which is this incredible love.
So one of the things this addresses is fear, because that comes up around faith. So it says here that true faith requires much trust that the Father does indeed know best and will indeed provide for all of your needs. So, you know, kind of in today's world, I think people going through what they're going through today and through the eons of history, we've been through these major ups and downs economically and in our life. But it's really understanding more about where that fear comes from. What is the Urantia book teachings around that?
Urantia book is an evolutionary theology. In other words, it actually, you know, says that we evolved from single cells and through all the different levels to, you know, apes and then finally to man. So we have an animal inheritance in our genetics. And, you know, what's characteristic, obviously, of animals, emotionally speaking, is that they are afraid of things. And they don't have love. They don't have faith. They have lots of fear because that's what preserves their survival. So the Ranch book says that's part of you, and it's an important part of you because, you know, you fear to be hit by a truck. You fear to be betrayed by a friend, you know. So fear has its place, but we transcend fear through our spiritual endowment, which says even if you're killed, hit by a truck, say, for example, you will be beloved in the next world, in the next life.
So there is an afterlife here.
The Urantia book is one of the most important sources you can find about the afterlife.
Yep, I'm reading it. So there is an afterlife and a belief in this afterlife. So there's no reason, you say, basically, I'm looking at this, that there is this strong belief in the afterlife. Explain a little bit further.
Well, if you're interested in what's in the afterlife, and you've looked at the biblical Christian or say even Islamic or even Hindu picture of the afterlife, you're going to be thrilled by the Urantia book because it has vastly more detail and clarity. And you can read it like you might read science fiction. You know, just suspend your judgment and it just depicts that we have an eternal life ahead of us. You don't have to live an eternal life. You can choose not to do it. But just about everybody after death survives into the first level of the afterlife. And there are multiple levels of the afterlife, and it does not provide for a reincarnation. You keep going up. It's an ascension cosmology. You're ascending to these higher and higher levels. And the depiction of that is really quite glorious to read.
So unlike the Eastern philosophy, there is no belief in reincarnation here. There's belief in the afterlife, but that's somewhere else. That's not like you're going to be reborn and come back here again as another soul walking the planet?
As on the introductory level, I'll say this. There is a kind of exceptional possibility of a kind of reincarnation in the Urantia book, but it's like technical, not even worth thinking about. Mainly what it's teaching is you're going up. You're not coming back.
Right, so you're spiraling up into a place of higher consciousness or elevated consciousness.
It's not just consciousness like a lot of folks think of. You just go into higher consciousness and you're sort of just there. The Urantia book says that when the next life, you're in a body. Everybody else is in a body, but it's a higher level body. It's a higher vibration body. You have a form. You have clothing. You have homes. You know, they don't have, you don't pay rent. You don't have a government like, there is government, but the angelic host is visible. And you're working directly with your angels, who are your instructors in the afterlife, and to perfect you and turn you into a fully enlightened being.
Fascinating.
And you interact, there's social life, there's cultural life, there's artistic life. You know, imagine Shakespeare.
But it's on different levels is what you're saying. You continue to elevate, just almost like in our society today, right? But you're not reborn in the physical, right? Or you are reborn in the physical.
You might consider it to be physical, but it's just like a higher vibration. They
Got
actually
it.
Say that there are these elements. You know, we have 100 elements in the atomic chart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another 200 elements. There's actually 300 elements in the universe, but the upper 200 elements are invisible.
Wow.
And according to the Rancho book, there's a whole ton of stuff on that. And it says that these higher spheres, they're actual planets. They're higher planets that are invisible. And you're on them, and you're standing on 2 feet.
Amazing.
But that's what heaven is.
I'll tell you that for our listeners, there's a lot here. This is a good starting point. If they're not going to get into the Urantia book right away and actually purchase it, which we know it's available, how would our listeners find more out about the teachings in the Urantia book if they're interested in pursuing it? How do they get in touch with you also to find this book itself? Plus, it sounds like there's study groups all over the place. If people want to just show up, can they come to the study group and listen in?
Yeah, they'd be very much embraced if you go to a study group. And the way to find out about the easy thing to do is just punch into Google the word Urantia.
Mm-hmm.
And Urantia, by the way, is the name of our planet.
Right.
So you punch in the name of our planet in Google, and the things that come up in the top five are all very reliable things. And there's the Urantia Foundation. They're really great. The Urantia Fellowship is really great. And just go from there and, you know, read a few chapters on the Internet. They've got it all posted on the Internet.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
And so, Byron, how would they get your book, The Center Within, Lessons from the Heart of the Urantia Revelation? How do they get that?
It's everywhere. It's on Amazon. It's any store will order it for you, or you don't have to come to my website, but it's originpress.com.
Okay.
You can get it there as well.
Well, it's been fascinating having you on today, and I know for the spiritual seekers, The Center Within is a true place to look and really just explore some of the ideas that are out there and the theology. I mean, I'm certain that you'd want to call it that, because this is definitely special work. It was very unique to me, I'll tell you that, because I had never run across anything like this, and I think for most of our listeners, it probably will be unique to them as well. I appreciate you sharing the story with us today and delving in a little bit in the very small way that we could in the time we had into the deep teachings of the Urantia. But,
my privilege, and really it was a delight. You know, I want to give out my email address in case people have a quick question. It's
okay.
Byron, Byron, at originpress.com, originpress.com. And yes, thank you very, very much, Greg, for this opportunity.
No problem. We appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you more about this, because it's certainly a fascinating topic, and your press itself has a tendency to print a lot of unusual and different books like this. So I encourage them to go to your press as well and check out some of the other titles that you've published.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks so much.
All the best. Bye now.